This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
We're back on Threshold Radio. We're with Kenneth Eve and Johnny Bluestar, and this is Rod Tyler. Before the break, Ken and Johnny, you were talking about something very, very important. You know, I'd like to call it corruption, you know, American style. When we talk about sophisticated lobbyists, you know, they're very good at what they do. And I think that we intuitively know that lobbying and bribery are intimately related. They're pretty much the same thing. And you were talking about how, you know, the Patriot Act, you know, got passed and the legislators didn't even bother to read it. So it makes one wonder, you know, who's really in charge? Who's really making the laws? Who is really making the decisions for us, you know, in government? Who's really in charge here? What do you think, Ken?
I think it's private industry who's in charge, and I think the real people who should be in charge are the voters, and they're not exercising their rights, which should be to kick out everyone who's been there more than 2 to 3 years. Vote them out. They should be gone.
They should be gone, but at the same time, you know, when we have, you know, Citizens United, for example, how is that possible? How can you change your legislators? How can you change Congress and the Senate and elect different people if the system is rigged, if it doesn't work?
Yeah, well, you've got a good point there, Rod, because and with the Supreme Court, you've got people who are appointed there basically for life. So we still have people on the Supreme Court that were appointed by Republican presidents from days gone by who are going to tout the same agenda until basically they die. So it is a danger in that the third part of our government, the judiciary, the third branch, you know, it's not a branch that we can touch by voting. It's a branch that's appointed by the president. And these appointments are all taken the same way any other appointment in the federal judiciary system is done. And that's through politicians. And who do you think controls the politicians, Rod? So you're right. There's a problem there that eventually the solution to the entire thing is to vote those people out who are career people who've been supposedly representing you for years and years, but they don't represent you. Get someone in there who says what you want them to say, who touts your own agenda, and vote them in. And eventually, that's going to be the people that appoint all the important people who work up to the Supreme Court. So that's the way we're going to do it. It's just going to take years.
Johnny, what's your take on this?
Well, there's a lot of money in lobbying. There's the question of the revolving door, which is a very important one, like Ken spoke of before. And there's the campaign funding, which is much of it in the serious way is used for television advertising.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that we have, as Ken brought up, we were talking about the purpose of television and television originally being thought of as maybe a potential educational tool, sort of like the Atoms for Peace idea.
Yeah.
You know, shades of hydrogen bombs in Fukushima. Yeah, so so you have this campaign funding for media, and media is used to basically, I believe, to hypnotize people in a certain way. Not in the conventional sense of hypnosis, but in a very subtle way. Narratives are created that are sort of favored by the instinctive part of our brain and our nervous system so that we will do certain things. And unless we take charge of our own
rationality, unless we examine things, unless we follow the Socratic dictum of know thyself, we are going to be enslaved by other people's opinions and ideas. And I think that has to do, I think if we're talking about a solution to the problem of protecting the American dream and getting an informed and what I would call an enlightened citizenry, we need to address this programming. How can we do that? How can we deprogram America?
That's a very good question, Johnny. And we certainly are not going to be able to do it through television because, as you adequately pointed out, the people have no control over what goes in on the media. And you're very adept at also pointing out that's the way that people get elected now is through media dollars. Since Richard Nixon's campaign, he was the first television campaign president. That's how it's been done. But I think the answer may be in your idea on the internet before the internet turns into the same thing that TV is now.
Well, I think that's probably true. The thing about the internet is that it provides every single thing that's in television now, doesn't it? Even TV series, original high quality TV series, what is it called? Man in the High Castle.
I don't watch TV, so I don't know.
Man in the High Castle is about, I don't understand the whole plot. I've only seen the first season. It's about the Nazis taking over America.
Oh, okay.
It's a very, very serious.
Sounds like Donald Trump.
not that I would ever think that, but I was thinking yesterday. I was reading that Statue of Liberty poem, and the New York Post had a cartoon of the other day after I written that poem of Donald Trump decapitating the Statue of Liberty.
Okay, I shouldn't laugh because that's what he wants to do, basically.
Getting back to what I was saying, there's nothing in media. As a matter of fact, as I understand it, some of these programs like Alex Jones and Coast to Coast, which have a sort of alternative media point of view, actually have acquired millions of unique visitors. They are really beginning to compete with so-called major media. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, once you're there, once you're in this, I have really given a lot of thought to this. And what you want to do is you want to encourage people who come into this forum to think. And the best way to think is to do exactly what we're doing now, is to discuss issues, perhaps with a little bit of help from somebody who's an expert or several experts in different fields, and actually interact with them and learn from them by discussing it, and particularly mm-hmm. discussing things which are of emotional importance. That's what a good, pardon the expression, a good bullshitting conversation was in college, right? You talked about things you cared about. And I grew up during the civil rights period, the Vietnam War, the psychedelic movement. There was plenty to discuss. And I think there's always been plenty to discuss, but people are spending their time talking about what movies they're going to or where they're going skiing.
Because that's what the media is telling them is important. I mean, if you look at the 11 o'clock news, you get fed this, to borrow your term, bullshit, and local police blotter, and then the rest of it's entertainment. What are you going to see after the 11 o'clock news? Or let's talk about the first story being the TV movie that they just showed. Since when is a TV movie news, Johnny?
The news is, and the news itself is...
entertainment.
It can almost make you cry. When I used to like CNN, in the earlier days, I really liked CNN, and now I see it's, when I look on my mobile, it's mostly feature, and when it's serious, it often has an agenda, a very obvious agenda, one way or the other. Everybody's right. Very fond of taking down Donald Trump for his excesses, but the reality is that all of these people are running, maybe the exception of Bernie Sanders to some degree, but all of them are partaking of and not speaking about, even what Rand Paul is not speaking about publicly, about some of the most important things, which are the surveillance. let's just look at the what the Fourth Amendment is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the right of the people to be secure in their persons, house, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures, should not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. I say the spirit of this is very obvious when it comes to electronic media and looking in people's, you know, when you look in people's papers and effects, mm-hmm. you can say, and effects, the same thing that's on paper is in a computer. The same spirit of privacy is a right guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment.
And I agree.
And so we're seeing something that is, it's very germane to all of this, because when you start to survey people, you're not just surveying them to find out what they did wrong. You're surveying them to shut them up. Because they
you're surveilling them for control, basically.
Yeah, you control the psychology. It's like terrorism. Terrorism really hasn't, I would say, destroyed anywhere near as many people as, say, any of these wars, like the Iraqi war. Mm-hmm. Nowhere near as many people. Nowhere as near as innocent people. I don't mean that we shouldn't go after them. Of course we should go after them. But the thing about terrorism that's so dangerous is the psychological effect that it has. It has a tremendous effect on people, on people's lives, and can result in all kinds of policies and activities that go far beyond the actual danger. What do you think of that, Ron?
Oh, no, definitely, definitely. And, you know, what doesn't help either is the fact that on top of all of that, you know, you have the propaganda machine, you know, working, you know, full steam, you know. And the way that it works, I mean, it's perfect. You know, you have the government doing all these things, and then you have the mass media, you know, which tends to always paint a very simplistic view of things, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys, which justifies pretty much everything, you know, justifies everything and all of the actions of the government and everything bad that they're doing. Oh, it's just great, you know. And you can cite many examples. You know, this has been the case, for example, we were talking about the situation in Ukraine. Ken was explaining what's really behind, but what do we see? You know, what do we see? What's the justification for that? Oh, it's like, oh, the freedom. Also, they're fighting for their freedom, right? Very similar to the like, and the reality, it's got nothing to do with that. You know, it's just it's a corporate takeover, you know, as you guys pointed out, it's a territory that was under the sphere of influence of Russia, right? And it is a corporate takeover, you know, from the West and Monsanto and you know, all the usual suspects, you know. Mm-hmm. But you have the propaganda machine telling you a completely different story. I think that's the scariest part of all, is that the majority of the people are not even aware of what's really happening, you know. And then we talk, oh, we can definitely have the antidote to that, social media and all of that. Well, I think we're way past that, you know. The other day I was reading about something that out of every dollar spent on the internet, 50 cents go to either Amazon or Google, you know. So pretty soon There isn't going to be anything to do on the internet, because it's, as Ken said, it's pretty soon going to be just like television, you know? It's going to be expensive, so you're not going to be able to afford it, you know? So, well, those are just my two cents, you know?
Yeah. Well, the power of propaganda is everywhere. And the shame of it is, you know, I'm thinking of what Thomas Paine might have thought. You know, he believed that, like all of the other founding fathers, that the spreading of democratic ideals was important. And what we've done is we spread democratic ideals as a veil for a corporate agenda and for really quite the opposite of a democratic freedoms.
I'm
not against having overthrown, and I was very much for having overthrown Saddam Hussein, but I had no understanding then of what was really going on, and that we would
it was based on a lie, basically. It was based on a lie.
Many lives, right?
Not just nobody went many to jail, lives. By the way. Nobody went
no.
to jail.
And nobody went to jail in the banking crisis who was responsible for it either.
Yeah, true.
And how many people went to jail for torture?
Only the whistleblowers, Johnny.
Yeah.
Only the whistleblowers.
that's just amazing.
The guys that said, "Hey, this is wrong. Throw that guy in jail." But basically, I mean, what everyone's really, I think everybody in America loves the idea of freedom of speech, loves the idea of civil liberties, but they also love the idea of staying alive. And now the government's saying, look, you guys are not safe. And it's the proof is you saw it on TV. You saw it on TV. 5,000 people were killed by terrorists who commandeered basically private airlines and smashed into the Twin Towers. We're going to keep you safe. In order to do that, temporarily, we're going to have to just exercise a little more control. And now we don't have, you know, we haven't seen anything that dramatic since 2001, but the government is still saying we still have to keep you safe. We have to know what's going on. We have to rout out these terrorists wherever they are. And they use it as an excuse to do most of their surveillance.
Well, we're going to go back and discuss in a couple of minutes a little bit more about the surveillance, its history, and its chilling effect on the American people on Threshold Radio. Back in a moment.
She's an angel with a bended wing. You know that she's grounded so that she will sing, not fly away. She's an angel with a golden heart. You know that she can make the wind.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
By God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welsh for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for Great Entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, dinner, and dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
Welcome back to Threshold Radio. This is Kenneth Eid with Johnny Bluestar and Rod Tyler, and we're talking about Sliding Into Chaos, the disappearance of the American dream.
Right. You know, Ken, NSA goes back to 1952 when it was established.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But there was a court case in 1973 called U.S. versus the U.S. District Court. And the court stated, this is the Supreme Court, the majority stated, the price of lawful public dissent must not be a dread of subjection to an unchecked surveillance power, nor must the fear of unauthorized official eavesdropping deter vigorous citizen dissent and discussion of government action in private conversation. For private dissent, no less than open public discourse, is essential to our free society. Now, when they did that, 2 years later, the Church Committee, remember them? They were assigned to investigate the intelligence organizations, and they found out that this little publicly known organization called the NSA had violated Fourth Amendment rights, particularly in the area of Project Minaret, colorful name, which had been developed to target peace and black power organizations by engaging in wireless wiretaps. Now, this was at a time when hardly anybody knew about it, and we're talking about 1973. I just want to bring up one more thing. In 1978, the New York Times commented after the FISA law was signed into law by Congress. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, governs the surveillance of people in the United States for the purpose of collecting intelligence related to foreign powers. A secret court known as the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, that's FISA, was created to hear requests for such warrants. Safeguards were put in place to ensure that investigators pursuing criminal matters did not obtain warrants under FISA that they could not get from an ordinary judge. So you see here that you're beginning to get the thing, well, we're going to have a secret court, and we're going to do, you know, and we'll still get some kind of warrants. Well, we know that things got a little bit more racy than that.
Yeah, and now, Johnny, they've even, I mean, the worst parts of FISA have been continued under what they've labeled to be the USA Freedom Act, which is kind of like a non sequitur, you know, to call it that.
It's double think.
Yeah.
You call the opposite something that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they still have the power to do that, and they in fact are doing it. The American Civil Liberties Union points out that not only the NSA, but the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and even local agencies are basically looking at private communications. And it doesn't go at just looking. They're not just doing this for entertainment. They're putting together watch lists like. Remember the McCarthy hearings?
Sure. I actually remember seeing them.
Yeah, that's where we're headed now. I mean, you know, we've got the do not fly list. We've got people not getting jobs because they found out that the government's been looking into their private affairs. And, you know, we've got people who are being hassled by the authorities over what they're getting, you pointed out that the Bill of Rights says they're not allowed to look at it without a warrant.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I mean, the further we get away from the amendments themselves, and we have all this sort of foundation of new law that dilutes and dilutes and dilutes, it really is kind of strange. Right?
Well, you know what, there's a troubling development, too. You know, surveillance is not just for governments. You know, not just for government. It's not just for communists and dictators, you know. Now we know that supposed democratic states, you know, like the United States, are investing heavily, you know, in keeping and actually strengthening the technologies for surveilling everyone. And it should be worth to mention that that it is actually very ineffective because we're also suffering from what's called data overload. You know what happened in California. How can it be that nobody knew about it? Because even if you have all of these systems in place, well, you just get so much data that it basically renders it unusable for the purpose of fighting terrorism. But it's very useful, you know, for collecting our personal data and for using it to target individuals. And But not necessarily for the things that they're telling us that they're going to use it, you know. And it's only going to get worse, you know. And we're seeing now the concept of what's called big data. You know, they're collecting massive amounts of data of everything that we do. And the problem is that is very dangerous. We don't even know the potential for big data. And the government has unlimited access to that, you know. They don't need.
Sorry, Ron.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, go ahead.
The reason why they collect big data in the first place, and you're talking about commercial enterprises collecting data, right?
Yes.
Is to find out what you buy and what you like, so they know what kind of advertisements to give you when you log in on your internet. You get blasted if you ever notice advertisements. Hey, that's what I was looking for yesterday when I was on the Google search.
That's right. Definitely.
There they are, right in your face.
Yeah, it's, you know, the thing about it is that if you were a serious terrorist, not one of these people who's kind of programmed by accident, by some crazy radical organization, and slowly they slip into a jihadist mentality or a white supremacist mentality, whatever it is that allows them to go ahead and kill people. But if you were an organization that was more rational in certain ways, well, you would do everything possible to hide from the internet. You would do everything possible to circumvent that.
So I'm sure they're using the dark net instead of the regular internet. Yeah.
So the answer is that you have to have. In other words, what I'm saying, Donald Trump is saying, you know, we want to keep every Muslim in the world out. Well, now, I don't know, by doing that, he's going to alienate millions of people, and many of them are suffering. But the other part of it is that he's going to alienate a lot of our friends, and a lot of the people in this country even who want to help, you know, because they're Muslims and they despise what's going on. It's just it's kind of a blanket thing. But whereas if you were going to seriously do this, you would have to have true human intelligence. You would have to do this in a very careful way. And you don't do it in a way that obstructs our civil liberties. But you do issue warrants. You do things in the right way. And you don't do them totally in secret. Perhaps there has to be a certain amount of secrecy initially. But it's not that kind of thing that you want to hide. You want to be able to actually have reasons to survey people. And I don't think that for a minute that people shouldn't be surveyed with all this going on, we have to do some kind of detective work. We have to protect ourselves. But I don't think that it's not just that this. In other words, if you say torture is wrong, you don't torture people. You find another way to interrogate. If you say the Fourth Amendment is right, you don't just go ahead and find every way to evade that responsibility. You find how to survey people in the correct way according to that amendment.
Right.
Well, we're going to take a break now and see you in a while. Thank you.
I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Aaron for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had 2 seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the 1st season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com. We're back in Threshold with Arthur Kenneth Ead and Rod Tyler discussing how this country is slipping into chaos and how can we work together to protect the American dream. Well, you know, I'm looking at, when I say chaos, I mean, wow, I'm looking at things like that we've talked about already, the poisoning of the food supply, the use of pharmaceutical and medical methodologies that don't help people. I'm looking at continual war and the possibility of porous borders and porous immigration procedures that let people come into our country that are actually genuinely undesirable and want to perhaps do us in. I'm looking at skies that are polluted. I'm looking at water that's polluted, food that may be irradiated, where antibiotics traces are found in the food, hormones, all kinds of preservatives. It's just a complete mess. And the policies that are letting this happen, you know, some people say they're on purpose and some people say they're a collective conspiracy and some people say they're just complete idiocy. But whatever they are, they're not giving people a real secure feeling about living in the United States. How would you describe this chaos that we're slipping into, Ken?
Well, I think that instead of being our society protecting each other and the government working for us, I think we're working for the government. I think that special interests in industry have lobbied themselves to the point where they're appointing their own people to these protective agencies that are supposed to be protecting our interests. And all the things that you've mentioned are things that have slipped by these agencies like the EPA, the FDA, and the USDA because they're not working for us anymore. They're working for the industries that they regulate.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the foundations of this. But unfortunately, besides that factor, there's also the factor that in order to really control this political matrix permanently, they are instituting procedures like the militarization of the police, like universal surveillance, things that the destruction of our rights to a trial by jury and to habeas corpus. So what you have is an alliance between the corporate interests and the government to not only control the economic factors of life, but also the political and social factors.
Well, you're right, Johnny, and the elites are running the country. And one thing that they have to worry about is what if people say, no, we don't want to do this? What if they demonstrate? What if they collectively get together as the Constitution? We've been talking about the Bill of Rights lately, you and me. As the Constitution says, we have the right to do. What if they do that, and power is taken away from these people, and which means it directly affects their pocketbook? They don't want this to happen. That's why we're moving toward a police state or a fascist state, where they can control us with basically military police, which we're seeing more and more, moving toward this trend.
Well, I think that one of the things that we've discussed, and perhaps the latest organized resistance, I'm not talking about sort of the groups of people who've been complaining and trying to protect themselves or act perhaps negatively towards the police. But I'm talking about organized political resistance was the occupation movement. But it was a very, very weak type of resistance. What do you think, Rod?
Well, you're right in that, Johnny. But, you know, before we continue, I would like to say something about this.
Sure.
I think the main challenge here is properly addressing this issue. And I think the issue is that we are seeing now the rise of a complete fascist corporate state, you know? And the problem with that is that as fascism creeps in, and, you know, and it happens in every society in history when it has happened, most of the people are not truly aware of what's really happening, you know? And you know why? Because of the propaganda machine. Because of the propaganda machine. And I think that the challenge here is in convincing people about the reality of what's really going on. Because we're talking about this, but I don't think that most people are truly aware of what's going on. And fascism, it's a term that properly describes what's going on. But the problem is that people tend to associate that term with a, you know, a jackbooted thug, you know, coming to your door in the middle of the night, you know, and taking you to some prison, right, to be tortured, and that might happen in the future. I have no doubt of that, you know, by the way things are going.
I think it may have happened already, but it happens to just certain selected individuals who are subject to, even right now, they have been individuals in this country who have been subject to perverse interrogation techniques and certainly detention without any cause and all kinds of things.
But yeah, Rod is right, Johnny, about this propaganda. And you know what they use as propaganda, and that's why people don't notice. They use patriotism. Hermann Goering said it. Basically, you can make the people do whatever you want. You just wave the flag and they all stand behind you. So, you know, that's everyone thinks of patriotism as a good thing. And it is. But what they will do is they will use it to rally behind their fascist causes, and that's how we'll get into this.
Well, one of the things that I like looking at the history of Nazi Germany, its development, I think what really happened here is that, first of all, Hitler developed a sort of core, an elite core of followers who really weren't all that influential at first. But as soon as he grabbed his power, he created a police state as soon as he could. I mean, fast. And so the people who had been sleeping, because he was right there writing his stupid book, you know, all the other things that he was doing very, you know, very obvious things where he was coming from. But they didn't really notice and they didn't care. And so by the time they began to notice, he was in charge and he had a police state and people who went against it could die.
Well, I think he rose to power basically, you know, by appealing to the people were, they needed somebody. They needed somebody to tell them everything was going to be good. They needed a big dad. And I think he rose to power by appealing to their feelings of nationalism and patriotism. I mean, that's how it's done.
And
that's how they're trying to do it here. The Bush started working on us with the, you know, rallying us all together. And every time the elite wants to go to war with their military industrial complex, they say, support the troops, because in the 70s, we protested against the Vietnam War because, you know, we were seeing all these horrible images coming back from the war. We didn't want war. But now they say, support our troops, because everyone who came back from Vietnam was rejected by society. And, you know, that's a guilt trip to put us on to get us behind these wars.
Well, another thing is like that Hitler did, which is, I think, also going on. Well, there was the Reichstag fire, right? And it was blamed I believe most people would say now that it was created by Hitler. But then, of course, Hitler found the perfect scapegoat in the Jews. And he literally turned the German people into animals, many of them, because they were afraid. But some of them, because they, you know, there was the Stockholm Syndrome, they began to believe because they were so scared. And they began to become loyal to the Nazi cause because there was nothing they felt they could do to stop it.
Right.
So it's a kind of mind control. The point is that you want to move fast. You want to create the police state fast before people wake up.
Right.
And the 9/11 did a lot to do that.
Oh, yeah. They used 9/11. They used 9/11 as an excuse for taking away all of our rights now, just to keep us safe.
And 9/11 has so, I don't want to go into all the details about it, but it has so many problems with they say that, you know, they don't like conspiracy theories. But when you actually get into the guts of 9/11, it looks like there was a conspiracy, but it is probably not a theory. And it's really hard to believe all the things that contributed to people who are skeptical about the causes. But if the causes are not what they seem to be, then what is the cause? And you see if you don't know exactly what caused 9/11 or who caused it, you know this. It was used as an excuse to take away our rights.
And it's still being used.
Oh, yeah. It's spreading in terms of...
The Bush's father, our first President Bush, hopefully the last one was the last.
Good luck.
But Bush's father used to call the people that advised his son, W, he used to call them the crazies. And one of the crazies was Paul Wolfowitz. He was kept away from Bush the father's office. He said, "I don't want this guy around me." He had a war plan on his desk for attacking Iraq that was there for many, many years. The first thing they did right after 9/11, instead of discussing what do we do about this problem, what are we going to do about keeping the American people safe, the first thing they did was said, how are we going to work this so we can attack Iraq? And Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, but they used it anyway.
Yeah, you know, in so many different ways. I remember, since I was, what I say, young and foolish then, I remember that speech in the United Nations by the Secretary of State, Colin Powers, and, you know, just the thought of these mobile biological vans moving around.
Yeah.
It was really scary. I mean, and I really thought things were okay. And then, of course, when Saddam Hussein in the first war was using human shields and things, I mean, obviously I felt this guy was a really bad guy. I wish we had gone after him then.
But he probably was a bad guy, but we supported him.
We supported him. We brought him into power. Now I know more about it. I look at things differently. Unfortunately, what's happened to me is that when I listen to the news, I really can't believe almost anything. I don't know. Either I don't know or I don't believe. We're going to take a break now with a sample of Patty Greer's beautiful song, "May Peace on Earth Prevail."
May peace prevail on earth, and let the children sing. Thank you.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charging in with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
This is Johnny Bluestar back on Threshold. Before the break, I was saying that when I read the news these days, I don't know what to believe.
What do you say about that, Ron? How's the environment of the news affecting you?
Well, you know, we saw something great happen, you know, for, I'm talking about the propaganda machine. It was great for them. The war in Iraq is a great example. We saw massive amounts of brainwashing taking place, you know, mind control at its best. Ken was talking about the war in Iraq, you know, the lies, you know, that they spread about Iraq in order to justify the invasion, and how the propaganda machine, you know, did its job beautifully. And, you know, the neocons, they prepared this plan. They went into Iraq with every intention of destroying Iraq, you know. It's that state that was created 80 years before, you know. They wanted to totally tear it apart, you know, including the army, you know, the government, probably with the exception of the oil ministry, you know. But the intention was to break up the country. And guess what? They achieved it. They did it. But, you know, there are so many lies. And still, to this day, it's incredible. After everything that we know, you know, they are still spreading some lies. You know, one of those lies is that, oh, the truth about Iraq, you know, was not known before the invasion, right? It's just right. That they didn't know. It's incredible, right? And I think the saddest part about that is that not only was where Cheney and Bush, you know, claims propagated, you know, throughout the world, but not only that, but the credibility, you know, of the mainstream media, you know, was totally destroyed, you know, because they went along. It was clearly established, you know. We saw that after 9/11, and now and then during the invasion of Iraq, we saw that they willingly went along. And that's when you knew. That's when you knew that. The media, as you had known it, you know, as a guarantor of free speech, right?
The Fifth Estate
was gone.
Well, right? you know, it's just amazing how easy it is to find some of these facts about the Iraq War and who exactly knew what. I don't mean that the internet and what you see on the internet is categorically true in any way. But I don't think it takes much of an effort because a lot of this is public knowledge. But what the media does, besides completely ignoring things, what it does is it downsizes things. You'll see certain things about this, you know, about, for instance, Curveball, who was talking about these. He was somebody who was being interrogated in Germany, and he was talking about these mobile biological units I mentioned before. And we were told that this information was not accurate. It was not good intelligence. Yet it was used in the State of the Union speech.
Also, Johnny, when I have a personal, I'm a personal witness to how the media slanted everything during that war to support the government's position.
Right.
I used to live between the United States and France. I'd go back and forth every month. When I was in the United States, I watched the news and it would say, it would give you little video game type things that'll show you what happens with these smart bombs that only hit military installations and don't hurt any people. And then you come to back to France and you turn on the TV and you see where these hospitals and schools have been blown up. Now they call it collateral damage.
And the water and the infrastructure for water, the water supply.
Everything. And you see these people suffering, bloody, you know, missing arms and legs. And you don't see that in the news media in America. Never. When we have a war, all you see is this, you know, shock and awe from a distance. And what do you think's happening with that, the city of Baghdad being destroyed? People are dying. That's what's happening. And they don't give the accurate numbers of the casualties. They've never told us how many people died in Iraq, only U.S. servicemen. And it's a small percentage compared to the number of civilians who died in that war.
Well, you know, speaking about the propaganda machine that Rod spoke of before, the idea, I remember, you know, the so-called surgical strikes. And then I also remember the details of the aftermath of the war. And that is just about as insidious as anything else. That you would absolutely destroy a country and talk about surgical strikes.
Well, not only that, I mean, the first Bush, when he wanted to do this, he got together an international coalition and got a UN resolution. The second Bush, he couldn't get a UN resolution for obvious reasons. So he just went ahead and made his own coalition of, you know, whatever small countries he could find to bribe or bludgeon into submission. And this is a completely illegal war from an international law standpoint.
Well, I think that the truth is that probably almost every war since World War II was a sort of an illegal war. Even the Korean War, which had backing of Congress, basically was a United Nations war where Congress did not really declare war. So none of these wars are declared. The idea of the declaration of war has been mitigated by the War Powers Act. But even so, even that is mitigated. It seems like, again, you have this executive authority, which is another cornerstone of a fascist government.
And you also have the desensitization of the people by using the words like war, which should be a bad word. I mean, it was a bad word when I grew up. It's not a bad word anymore. Now we've got the war on drugs, the war on terror, the war on this, the war on that. It's a good thing. And when we have a war, everyone rallies behind the president and supports the troops, no matter, you know, what this consequences may be to the country that we're invading. And no matter whether the people have any reason or to think that we should be doing this. I don't think that anyone thought we should be going into Iraq. And it was all based on lies, as Rod pointed out.
With that unpleasant note, we need to take your leave. If you have listened carefully to the show, you understand why we titled it Slipping into Chaos. America, we are counting on you to regain your footing. A special thanks to Patricia Welch for her song, Top of the World. Check out her CD at patriciawelch.com/CD. That's Patricia Welch, WELCH.com/CD. Thanks to Stephanie Slevin for her song, Look at What You've Done. Check out her fabulous songs on Reverb Nation. Thanks to Patty Greer for her songs, Autumn Glow and Let Peace Prevail on Earth. Patty Greer is a filmmaker specializing in the chronicling of critical information about crop circles. Visit her website at pattygreer.net. That's G-R-E-E-R, pattygreer.net. Please note, the books, West Side Warrior, Books on Manhattan, and The Thrice Born have all made it to number one bestsellers in Kindle. And finally, thanks to the great Hassan Khan for his extraordinary work. See you next week.
May peace prevail.